I'm opposing the assumption of state power by Black people. And the way that they do that is to reverse the Great Migration to some degree, moving Black back from northern and western cities back to the South from which Black people fled during the Great Migration. The Great Migration happened over about 60 years, 1916 to 1970. Black people moved out of the rural South into cities in the North and West. But before that, 90% of all Black people lived in the American South. In fact, at the end of the Civil War, three Southern states were majority Black: Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina. Another three were within 4 percentage points of being majority Black. Every Southern state had large Black populations. And when they had those large Black populations, like Mississippi during Reconstruction, they had tremendous amount of Black power.
That is an op-ed columnist for the New York Times and CNN contributor Charles Blow talking about his new book, The Devil You Know, with a really interesting premise, which is that the great migration of Blacks from the rural South to the northern urban centers didn't really improve their social or economic conditions. And he argues the fastest way to get greater equality for Blacks is for them to migrate to the South, where they can more easily consolidate political power. It's a really interesting premise that sounds counterintuitive. It's a really interesting conversation with him about a whole host of things. He has a very unbiased view. I think people from the left and the right will appreciate hearing what he has to say. So enjoy Charles Blow. Before we get to that, there's something going on in the world that really needs to stop. So a Starbucks barista lost his job because he tweeted out some crazy order that a customer made. And this is what was the order. Just listen to this list of things. The drink had to have 5 bananas, heavy cream, extra caramel drizzle, extra caramel crunch, extra salted brown butter topping. Didn't know that existed. Frappuccino chips, 1 pump of honey blend, 7 pumps of dark caramel sauce, you know, because 8 would be gauche. Extra whipped cream and ice. Oh, and it had to be double blended because, of course, what kind of an animal would only blend this once? What is going on with people? Really, just order coffee and leave, okay? Stop with this nonsense. Oh, by the way, speaking of that, did you notice there's no coffee in this drink? So, question becomes, how soon after you drink this do you lapse into a diabetic coma? All right, enjoy Charles Blow. My guest this week is a terrific journalist and op-ed columnist for the New York Times. He appears frequently on CNN, and he has a new book out, The Devil You Know, a Black Power Manifesto. Charles Blow is with us. Charles, great to have you on the show.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I really admire your work and your writing, so I've been excited to talk to you for a while. Your book is very, very interesting. In that it's counterintuitive in a lot of ways, but then also makes a lot of sense. And there's a passage in there where you say, Black people fled the horrors of the racist South for so-called liberal cities of the North and West, trading the devil they knew for the devil they didn't, only to come to the painful realization that the devil is the devil. And, that obviously, speaks to, you know, the core of what your book is about. Explain to folks what your proposing in this book to deal with this systemic ongoing problem of racism in America.
Right. I'm opposing the assumption of state power by Black people. And the way that they do that is to reverse the Great Migration to some degree, moving Black back from northern and western cities back to the South from which Black people fled during the Great Migration. The Great Migration happened over about 60 years. 1916 to 1970, Black people moved out of the rural South into cities in the North and West. But before that, 90% of all Black people lived in the American South. In fact, at the end of the Civil War, three Southern states were majority Black: Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina. Another three were within 4 percentage points of being majority Black. Every Southern state had large Black populations. And when they had those large Black populations, like Mississippi during Reconstruction, they had tremendous amount of Black power. Mississippi produced our first 2 Black senators. They sent large delegations of Black people to their state house. But that is the possibility of that power significantly diminishes with, number one, the collapse of Reconstruction, but also the removal or the migration of people out of the South. I'm saying that you can still have that.
It's really fascinating because at first blush, you hear that and you go, okay, well, Charles is drunk. Doesn't make sense, but like it does make sense in a lot of ways. And I guess a good example of that is Atlanta and what Stacey Abrams was able to do. And in fact, you moved to Atlanta. You're originally from Louisiana. In terms of 2020 and what was able to be done there, speak to that a little bit and how that, I think in your eyes is a model for what you're talking about.
Well, this election cycle was the first cycle, at least since Reconstruction. I just don't know the date on Reconstruction. At least since Reconstruction, that Black people with the majority of a coalition that delivered any state for a presidential candidate, and it was absolutely the first time in the entire history of the Senate that Black people were the majority of a coalition that elected a U.S. senator. And they didn't just elect one, they elected two, which was monumental. Mm-hmm. And there were two reasons for that. On the one hand was amazing organizing by all of these voter groups, including by Stacey Abrams, which is an amazing part of that story. But on the other hand was reverse migration. The Black population of Georgia doubled from 1990 to 2000, from 1.7 million Black people to over 3.4 million Black people today. That meant that, you know, in 1992 was the last time that Georgia went for a Democrat, went for Bill Clinton, but Black people were not the leaders in that coalition. They were 25% of the population of Georgia. This time around, they were 33% of the population of Georgia. And because of their voting records, that made them the leaders in that coalition. And that is just a huge change. And it shows the possibility of what reverse migration, putting more bodies into the space, can do in conjunction with real organizing, which then had more bodies to organize.
Just no pun intended to play devil's advocate. Don't you leave a vacuum in the North if you do that, that then weakens the power of the Black voter in the North if you have this migration? I mean, I think it's fair to say that there's racism everywhere. It's much more palpable and on the surface and powerful, unfortunately, in the South than the North, but there's racism in the North. How do you avoid a vacuum and then that becoming a hotbed of racism and Black voter suppression?
Well, I don't know if I'm answering this directly or not. I think I understand the question. One, I will say this. Black power is not Democratic Party power. It's not any political party's power. When we talk about having a vacuum, that is a vacuum for Democrats necessarily. That's the way I read that question. Number two, though, is that if Hillary Clinton has simply won the southern states that she won in the primaries, those with large Black populations in the general election, she could have lost every single one of the Midwestern states and still been president.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
What I'm suggesting is you move Black people into a position where they actually are the people who can deliver a state. Right now, that is not the case. Black people are called in to break the tie, especially when white people split down the middle.
Right.
They want your 10 to 15% in Michigan when white people split down the middle. They want it in Pennsylvania when white people split down the middle. But that is not real power. They only need to excite you around election time. They are in the off years, they are trying to get more of those white people to go to one side or the other. If it was real political power and they really cared about what you thought in Pennsylvania or Michigan or wherever or in Ohio, then when Hillary Clinton lost 2016, they would have been aiming policies at those Black people in those states. But they did not. They spent 2 years talking about economic anxiety among working class white people and how we win those white people back. In fact, Joe Biden starts his entire political campaign saying, I am the candidate who can win back the working class white people in the Midwest.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And in terms of the effort, the Black Lives Matter movement and other movements to address racism nationally, obviously you have this idea, this concept of migration to the South. If you could sort of alter the course of other efforts to combat racism, what would you do? And what do you feel maybe is missing the mark a little bit in the existing approaches to the problem?
The way my thinking works around this issue about race and power is that you have to disconnect the two. You have to disconnect racial growth and enlightenment from Black people's liberation. You should want to not be racist for yourself.
Right.
We should all be on a path to enlightenment for our own sake. If racism is ahistorical and anti-science and ignorant, we should not want to be those things.
Right.
And that's the reason that we should do that. But the moment that I start to say, the only way that I can be liberated or that my people can be liberated and they can be truly seen as free and equal is that white people have to grow into the acceptance and realization of that, then I've centered whiteness and Black liberation. And that's not the way that should work.
Yeah, is it meeting in the middle, so to speak? I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, racism is something that one shouldn't have to work at. You just should not be that, right? But we see voter suppression laws are coming out of the woodwork now after 2020, which obviously is a way to target minority voters and suppress them. So what is the answer to that? And I guess your migration concept would address that, right? Because it'll be such a powerful coalition of voters in a concentrated region that really no voter suppression laws could really overtake that?
Listen, white supremacy has worked that way literally since Reconstruction to try to disenfranchise Black voters, particularly when they start to in enough volume that they can make a real difference.
Right.
I see no difference between 1890 and 2020 in that regard, in the way that white supremacy seeks to tailor the electorate to its benefit.
Right.
So all the growth that people have experienced over that period of time from 1890 to 2020 still doesn't change the fact that white supremacy in power will do the same exact thing. That is the reason that we cannot condition Black liberation on personal growth.
Right.
Because personal growth seems to have had no effect on that.
And so what you're saying is the only effect you can have is to vote those people out of office through...
Yes, it's to assume the power. It is to exist in great enough numbers that you start to change the dynamic. The first thing that you can do in a state, that, you know, you can still have the power to gerrymander districts even on a state level for your state house. But judges are elected on a statewide basis for the most part, the state judges are. And the governor, who can veto laws, is elected on a statewide level. So that's where your entry point is, getting enough votes that you change the governor of your state, because that is your first safeguard against these laws, because they can still pass with a veto-proof majority, but that's harder to do. And then it is to exist in enough power, in enough concentration, that you can then eat away at state house seats. Up until the late 1960s, Black people were essentially frozen out of Southern state houses altogether. Hard to find a Black space in there.
Yeah.
But since then, there have been real inroads in places, including here in Georgia, where you have larger Black delegations. You just need to be able to exist in a large enough numbers that you push that number higher to the point where you cannot even have to deal with the law that needs to be vetoed.
Yeah, it's a really great point. And in the context of what's happening with the Republican Party now, you know, let's assume the migration happens and you have this incredibly powerful voting bloc in this region of the country. You have a Republican Party, and I know racism, it's not a Democratic issue, Republican, it's an issue in and of itself. But for a moment, bear with me on this. So you have this Republican Party as of now in 2021 that, you know, look, had underpinnings of racism and, you know, supporting white supremacy. But now it's just, it's right on, they're wearing it right on their sleeve, right? Like, I mean, they just put a sticker on their back that says, you know, I don't like anything that's anybody that's not white, period. So now you have one of the two major parties where the what was the very extreme right fringe is essentially the party now. So how do you deal with that in the South or in the North or the West or whatever it might be? Because you know these people aren't going to take it lying down. So you go down there and you start, you know, racking up African-American or minority candidates in major offices across various states. You've got a Republican Party that's just going to come straight at you. I mean, look, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like, they're just wearing it on their sleeve. Like, how do you up the game against that when they're going to keep upping their game against what you're trying to do?
Well, first thing I'll say is that this is kind of a revolutionary act, and there's no such thing as a revolutionary act existing without risk or resistance.
Right.
So the fear of resistance cannot be a motivator. The very fact that this level of white supremacy has been allowed to win enough space in our government is a victory that cannot stay won.
Right.
Morally, the idea that to say like, oh, well, if you make progress, they'll fight you. And?
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying like, I'm just very alarmed at where this country is and especially on this issue. And I think it's a very interesting and compelling case you make for concentration of power, because you're right, you're getting at the root evil, and sort of you get the right people in play, then you can really affect change. I mean, you grew up in Louisiana, and did you have a personal sort of, you know, instances of racism or dealing with racial injustice that affected you as a young man, as a boy?
No, the majority of my racial education was the inverse of that, which was I existed primarily in majority black spaces, and so the power structures were black. And so I basically existed not having to deal with race as an oppositional issue, and also to be defensive about it on race.
Mm-hmm.
So the tiny little town, the one police officer is the black guy, and he's replaced by another black guy who's my cousin by marriage.
Right.
The idea of ever feeling unsafe is foreign to me.
Yeah.
In my space.
Yeah.
And so I grew up or going to school in a school that was founded in 1800s to educate the sons and daughters of former slaves. So you walk. I'm existing in legacy of black people always excelling, also always being self-sufficient. You know, those kids at that school literally built the school themselves. They made bricks before they went to school in the morning. They got up, made the bricks, and then they went to class.
Yeah.
And they built it with their own hands. So this idea, like, so for me, the foreignness is to exist in a world where anyone would ever say to me, I'm smarter, better than you by birth.
Right.
I'm superior to you by birth. What that is, it's the most insane kind of a statement that I think anybody could ever make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just complete ignorance. Yeah. I could talk to you all day, and I think you're a real national treasure in terms of your thoughts and the writing that you do. And so I'm encouraging everybody to go out, grab the book, The Devil You Know, A Black Power Manifesto. This has been Charles Blow. It's really great to have you on, and keep up your unique and powerful voice. We really need you out there.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, there you go. That's Charles Blow. Very interesting guy. He's got some great pieces online. A lot of interesting perspectives in his columns. Check out the book and check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Paul Mercurio. Always posting stuff there. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody, and we'll see you next week.